reading from the Narada Bhakti Sutras. Chapter 4, verse 72. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. How's this, sir? Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Nasti teshu jati vidya rupa kula dana. Kriyadi veda. There are no distinctions among such pure devotees in terms of social class, education, bodily beauty, family status, wealth, occupation, and so on. Purport, Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, does not discriminate among devotees based on their birth, wealth, and so on. So why should we? Krishna said, O son of Pritha, those who take shelter of me, though they be of lower birth, attain the supreme destination. And according to the Padmarana, anyone who thinks of the deity of Vishnu is merely a stone, or the guru is an ordinary man who thinks a Vaishnava belongs to a particular family or country as a resident of hell. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Daksura Muritam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Vansha kalpa tarubhyascha vipakshindu bhayebhyascha patitanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namah. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Vyadvaita Gadadha Srivasade Gaura Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Amir, you can also take if you want.
Okay.
Greetings from New York. I'm at the home of Amir, and we have some guests, and I'm going to stay here and give class today. So the section we've been discussing is, because we talked about devotion, and now it's talking about the devotee, and we just finished the section where the effect of a devotee, the effect of a devotee, because, you know, yoga psychology, everything's of, you know, the mind is made of the same, everything's made of the modes. So composed one way, they make the mind, composed another way, they make the chair. But it's the same composition. So there really is a mind-body connection. Now, it's okay for the kind of class here, it's not a problem. There's a mind-body connection. I often give classes on environment and consciousness, how the environment, the shape of the environment will affect the shape of the mind. It's actually one of the most important things in spiritual life. If you want to develop willpower, which comes from the mode of goodness, you have to mold your mind to a certain form. And one of the most powerful ways to mold the mind is the environment. Just like I'm at Amir's house now, it's so clean, it's so orderly. So it has an impact on your mind to be clean and orderly, to be clear-thinking, spiritual, what to speak of, the pictures of Krishna and the books of Krishna and the deities and the food that's cooked. It's such a powerful effect on the mind. So when one actually becomes pure in heart, devotional, it has such an effect. It even affects people without them being aware of who you are. The highest devotee has such an influence and such an effect. We were discussing this. I have one guest with me that sometimes listens to this Sangha. So we're discussing this, that if you perfect ahimsa, then people can't be violent in your proximity. Why? It creates a condition of the mind that so much influences the environment by that purity of the mind. And it says a Mahabhagavat, the topmost devotee, everyone becomes affected by them without them even knowing, except one person. One who has a little knowledge and has become proud. It's just like a rag will be influenced by fire. But if you dip the rag in water, the influence is going to be less. There's still the influence. So the influence, the effect of the devotee is very, very powerful. What to speak of the fact that the devotee pleases God and God's in control of everything. So those things connected with the devotee get benediction and mercy. We're discussing in previous verses about the families of the devotees. Generations and generations have benefited. I can see, even in my own family, the effect it's had on my whole family that I have dedicated myself to God. It wasn't a bad idea in the old Catholic families let one of my sons become a priest. If they actually became a priest, if they actually dedicated themselves to God, it's a great benediction if someone is saintly in the family. And because God is pleased. And that saintly person, by his perception, by his view, he can reveal the sacred text. Acharya Purusho Veda. The texts are understood through the teachers. Otherwise, as we were discussing, too much we project our own prejudices. You can see, even in a room, people look at the same thing. They have different opinions. Why? Because their mind has been molded, their experiences have been different. We carry our experience. That's why teachers are necessary. Because books, we can manipulate by our minds to extract anything. Even in our tradition, you know, we have, you know, people say, you know, Prabhupada said, and they come up through taking quotes of Prabhupada with completely variant philosophies. What has been done in the name of God? What has been done in the name of scriptures in the name? So you have any person who can actually respond. Not only respond, but a person who can reveal and help us understand. When I read the sacred text, I have to say I've read Gita 100 times. Each time I've read it in the same place, I've seen more and more and more and more and more. And one who has that experience, they can help other people to understand more and more and more. In fact, they can save time. So, The holy places become holy by the saintly people that are there because they have the ability to access those places. Therefore, going to Vrindavan, we always recommend through guides. through guides. And I've seen the people that go on these tours. I'm talking to people here. And so sometimes you'll see that if I talk to people that, you know, that's why in those tours, people come back so transformed. Because they've had people that guided them. Same person without guidance goes may have a bad experience. And then they have people that can show them, give them a perspective to see. Vishyachriya kabe shude abe man kabe hamaherabo tribrindabam. When the mind is peaceful and we're free from a desire for selfishness, then we see Vrindavan. It's not just material eyes, it's perspective. It's like taking a picture. When you take a picture, you need two things. You need the perspective, the view to look at it, and you need the focus. So the focus is the purity of mind that comes from the spiritual practices. And the focus is the perspective to see things according to the eyes of one who has the proper perspective. So look at it in this way. Sometimes you can't. Yeah, I'm always amazed. If those of you who haven't seen, please go to YouTube, Bhakti Immersion Retreat, and look at the video that was made by Hillary. I've seen people, this thing with pictures. I go and people show pictures, and they show you 100 pictures of the same thing in a different variant. And then you get someone who's actually like a photographer who, you know, has some experience and looks at it away. Then you'll get a whole different vision of it. So it's like that, seeing something through the eyes of people who see it in the right way and communicate, reveal it in the proper way. So here it's glorifying these devotees and their power and their influence. One time my guru, Prabhupada, was challenged. Prabhupada was challenged and said, are you a guru? He said, yes. Can you show us some mystic power? And Prabhupada pointed to his young disciples and said, I have made them Brahmins. I have made them devotees. That is great mystic power. If you ever saw, one day I'll share with you, there's a lot of films that are done with Prabhupada, and they're amazing. Because it shows the early days and the kind of people that came. You know, people had such crazy ideas and were hippies and things. You know what I'm saying? But the fact of how he can change the people, you know, that's the power, the influence. There's even one verse, Pramanda Brahmate Konya Bhagavan Jeev, Guru Krishna Prasadiva. We're wandering from universe to universe, from species of life to species of life, until by the mercy of Guru and Krishna, we get the Bhakti Lata Beej. We get the seed of devotion. And what is the seed of devotion? It's the conception that by serving God, my life will become sublime. Not only that, but the experience of doing so, the taste of doing so. And the taste, even though it's not the full manifestation of praying, it's kind of a drop or a shadow of praying, it gives us that faith and trust. But where do we get that? We get that from the souls who have it. And as you were mentioning, it's very fortunate that there's so many nice teachers and so many people. It's not just an intellectual thing. When we did this Bhakti retreat, I'll send you the link because I'd like you to see the video. When we did this retreat, the idea was Bhakti immersion, that the way Bhakti works is every object has a Shakti. So acts and objects of devotion have a Bhakti Shakti. So if you're absorbed in your meditation on an object of devotion, it will instill love in your heart for that object of devotion, for the divine. It will have a potency. It will have an effect on him. So it's a very, very great... So you see, when people go to these retreats and things like that, they get transformed. It's not just some philosophy. It was the application of the philosophy that bore the fruit of the philosophy, which is if you surrender to the divine, you surrender to God, you open your heart to those experiences and get some trust and faith that there is sublimity in reality. And that associating with reality when the consciousness becomes clear will communicate the sublimity in reality. What's the sublimity of reality? Sublimity of reality is love of reality. It's relationship with reality. It's that connectedness with reality, which we feel nourished by, because we're kind of plugged into the right thing. The term is called Dharma. What is Dharma? Dharma means, what is Dharma? In other words, what's the purpose of something? The purpose of something is the intent for which it is made. So what is our Dharma? What is our eternal nature? The thing which we are made for. We are made of God. We are made for God. But somehow that's been transformed now. So the Dharma, the fluidity of devotion and love has been covered by ego. So what happens is it's kind of like water becomes ice. Ice has liquidity, but it's not manifest. You can't wash with ice. You can't bathe with ice. You can't clean with ice, right? But you put it in a certain condition, some heat, a different temperature, a normal temperature, it becomes its nature. That's what bhakti is. Bhakti is we have ego. It's covering our love. And the heat, the association of the powerful people, the spiritual people, it kind of melts the heart. I was just meeting with one person today who came on the retreat and was talking about the transformation they experienced. And they couldn't understand why. Because they were crying and crying uncontrollably. And they were saying, why am I crying uncontrollably? Why? Because the ego... And this wasn't an egotistical person, but still those conceptions, they get melted by the love of the people who have that love and sing of that love and teach of that love and create communities based on that love. So it's describing here the influence. And now, of those devotees, don't think of such devotees who have that influence. Do not discriminate and think they have to be born in India. They have to be born in India in a Brahmin family. They have to have a certain auspicious body. They have to have a family status. They have to have a particular occupation. Because bhakti, it's called, there's three aspects of philosophy. One is called Sambandha, one is called Abhideya, and one is called Vyoja. Sambandha basically means metaphysics. What is your conception of reality? Abhideya means what is your means of realizing reality? And Vyoja, what is the result of doing so? These three categories compose philosophy. So, Sambandha, metaphysics, in bhakti means there's God and God's energies. The only thing is one, there's no love. Bhakti requires a relationship. It requires the person who loves, it requires the object of love, and it requires the love. So the Abhidhaya, the means of realizing the absolute reality, is to love the absolute reality. Think in common terms. How can someone know you? If someone doesn't love you, they can't know you. Because to know someone means they have revealed themselves to you. And why would you reveal to someone? Unless you trusted them, unless there was some relationship. So bhakti means we have relationship with the absolute reality, and the absolute reality reveals themselves. Bhagavad Gita says, Tesham Satyati Yatanam Bhajatam Priti Purvakam Vidami Buddhi Yogam Twamya. For one who worships me with faith and devotion, I give them the understanding. There's this reciprocation. So in the philosophy of bhakti, as explained here, it's saying very, very clearly now, okay, here's a very powerful people. They can change your life. Don't judge them by external needs. A person is advanced in spiritual life not by his scholarship, not by his knowledge. He's advanced by his love and dedication to God. And one can be very renounced but have no love in their heart. And they have a complete ego. Someone can be very, very austere and have no love in their heart and have a complete ego. But someone can be a great devotee and have a big ego. Devotion is humility. It's surrender. It's love. At the bhakti retreat, I said that for 40 years I was searching for a definition of bhakti, and I finally came up with a definition of bhakti. I read it in a book called Bhakti Sandarbha. It said bhakti, the essence of which is seva. This teacher, Sri Jiva, said the essence of bhakti is seva, which is loving responsiveness to God with the faculties of mind, body, and word. So what is bhakti? It's this feeling of love, which means to respond to an object of love with the desire to serve, to the faculties of the mind, to the faculties of the body, to the faculties of the words. This is bhakti. And if you have that, you can be a bhakta. And so this Abhidhaya tattva means, the means is bhakti. There's a whole book written about bhakti. And then there's one verse in the Bhagavatam, 18 volumes, the Bhagavatam. And there's four verses that are called the Chatur Shloki Bhagavatam. Four verses. And two of the verses represent what is the Sambandha. One represents what is the Priyojana. What is the means? And one is what the Priyojana, what is the goal? And one represents Abhidhaya, what is the means? So the verse that says the means is, one should search after this. Means what? That love, that prema, that full consciousness of awareness of the soul that butts into full expression of love. Prema pumartha mahat. The highest value is love. Prema, for God. In the Narada Bhakti Sutras, love is defined, bhakti is defined as prajman, parama prema rup. It's the nature of the topmost love for God. When you have that topmost love, there is nothing in your consciousness but that love, but that desire to serve. That's samadhi. That's the full focus, the full consciousness. So people who have this, the Abhidhaya says, you should search for that anywhere and everywhere. Indirectly and direct. Anywhere and everywhere means there's no material qualification. A child could be a great devotee. He's not mature in intelligence yet. He doesn't have knowledge. He's not austere. But he may love God. one devotee at the temple was telling me, Stan Kuttabhat, he's one of the main people there, talking about his little daughter who was born on Radhashtami. And he said she just lays down on the couch and she starts imitating Draupadi. And that's the Mahabharata. I don't know if you know the story. Raghunath always sings that song, Hey Govinda, Hey Gopal. There's some song, Hey Nata Narayana Vasudev. It's from her song, Krishna Protect Me. The young girl is doing the whole pastime. I mean, the parents have to get her a lot of cloth so that when Krishna disrobes her, unlimited. Young child can be a great devotee. It doesn't matter species, born, unborn, anything. It's just a dedication. It's a conception. It's a faith in the heart. What's that faith? The trust. And what's the trust? That I am happy in this kind of shelter, like the hands, right? I'm happy in connection with the body. So I'm happy in connection with God. That's my anyata ashraya, my only shelter. I'm satisfied in that. And what's the ultimate shelter? What's the ultimate need? Love. You're not sheltered until your heart's filled with love. And your heart won't be filled with love unless you have an appropriate object of love. And in Vaishnavism, that's the divine. And so here, says, one should not think in material terms towards a spiritual person. Even one great teacher warned, even when you deal with guru, there's two things. There's ordinary dealings and inspired side. The person may be of a particular culture, he may be of a particular nature, but there's an inspired side. And what's that inspired side? The inspired side is Krishna. It's called Guru Tattva. It's the potency of God coming through to attract us, to instruct us, to enliven us. So we could be very, I remember one time there was a person in India, and I sometimes used to go and hear from him. He was a great scholar. And then he got into an institutional conflict with another institution, and then they fight, right? And then criticism would go. Then the man died, and he was a very, very, very old man, you know, and he died. So they had his function. And I went to the function. I was there at the place which was having the conflict with him. But when people die, then you got to respect them. So I'm there to speak. Right? I'm going to say, look, I know there's been conflict, but I want to talk about the inspired side. And I talked about how many people this person changed, how many people this person loved, how many people this person inspired. I'm not going to talk about his anger or of course, when one becomes pure, then naturally all these qualities go. So we're going to read on. We're going to cut the class short today in another 10 minutes because I also have to get back to the ongoing, and you have to get back to. So let's read this purport. In Upadeshamrita, Rupa Goswami also warns us not to take a material view of devotees. Quote, being situated in his original Krishna conscious position, a pure devotee is not identified with the body. Such a devotee should not be seen from a materialistic point of view. Indeed, one should overlook a devotee's having a body born in a low family, a body with a bad complexion, a deformed body, or a diseased or infirm body. Because generally, it's kind of, piety comes, and there's bad comes. You may be born in a particular way with a disease, an infirmity, or something. Don't look at a devotee, this is his bad karma. Look at it as Krishna's mercy. Because Krishna made, whatever God does to us, if you have the proper consciousness, you get beyond duality because you see it's meant to bring us closer to God. And we will experience that. Once we surrender to God, surrender to Krishna, we will actually understand very clearly that everything in our life that has come to us was to give us the jewel of realization by which we can become more aware of our divine nature of love. Indeed, such a according to ordinary vision, such imperfections may be prominent in the body of a pure devotee, but despite such seeming defects, the body of a pure devotee cannot be polluted. It is exactly like the waters of the Ganges, which sometimes during the rainy season are full of bubbles, foam, and mud. The Ganges waters do not become polluted. Those who are advanced in spiritual understanding will bathe in the Ganges without considering the condition of the water. Okay.
Sure. I don't want to keep you.
Okay. Yeah. Wow, that's a tough one because they're not, you know, the Jamuna is so, you know, polluted now and things. But actually, I always bathe. I mean, I bathe in rivers in India that normally I'd never bathe in. Because of the spiritual, you know, at stake. I don't, you know, there's something beyond it. Srila Prabhupada states that one should not think, oh, here is an American Goswami on that basis discriminated. So Prabhupada was writing at the time where his young people came to India. And it was really funny because we were young and we all of a sudden got these big positions, you know, at a young age. Because when Prabhupada started his movement, there were only young people and they weren't trained. But he had to make some kind of social distinction. So he made some sannyasis and presidents and of these things. So one person described, it almost became like Lord of the Flies. If you read that book. You know, it was kind of, and the classic story was, he gave sannyas to these two young men. They were 21. But they were, you know, they were as old as everyone else. So one was like had a French-Canadian accent, you know, like really deep. And the other one was like a gangster. He had like a broken nose. But they were kind of inspired. So he gave them sannyas. And they wanted to go and defeat all the other philosophies. So now in the Madhva line, another Vaishnava line, they only give sannyas to people that they search out in certain high families that have the highest astrological karma. And it's like an amazing thing how that's done. And then there's a senior sannyasi, and when he dies, there's a junior one. Then he becomes, and then he has to choose another junior. So the next successor may be 12, you know, cause, and then they wait till they get older. So they're not engaged. So he went to the most respected Madhva person who I met. I mean, you know, and their things, they'll only eat offered by pure wood fires or cow dung fires. They'll only bathe in holy rivers. You know, their whole life is so regulated, they're learned. I went to see the man too, it was great. So they came to him, and they wanted to challenge him, and they looked at him. But they had just began to study, right? And they looked at him, and they challenged him. What are the three, in the French-Canadian accent, what are the three aspects of the absolute truth? Which is like the basic, Brahman, Brahmati, Paramati, Bhadri. And that guy started to laugh. He was just so amused. They were telling you these stories. So sometimes, but on the other hand, Westerners who've come to Krishna consciousness by Prabhupada's grace should not be puffed up and think themselves better than Indian Brahmins. The Shastra states, Kalo Sudra Sampala. In the age of Kali, everyone is born as Sudra. Sudra means the lowest. We're all. We don't have samskara. When I'm in India, I see what cultured people were 40 years ago, what someone in the mode of goodness was like, and the culture and the character. They had some scholars that if they gave their word, they would follow it for the rest of their lives. I always tell the story of this first person I worked there was this old Indian man who Prabhupada made the principal of the school there. And he was in his 70s, right? And he was an incredibly qualified person. He had an MA in Sanskrit, a PhD in Hindi. He was a master artist, had his own fine art studio. He was a millionaire businessman. He was a master yogi. And he had a master's in filmmaking from the University of Southern California in 1950. What happened to this person, because I told this before, but is somehow in his joint family, he was the oldest brother, and he had to make peace with his younger brother, and he got into conflict with his son, and he had a side with his younger brother for the family, and his son became insulted and left home. Never saw his son again. So when his son left home, his wife died of heartbreak. He was the only son. And then at that moment, he vowed, until my son is found, I will never again come home. I will never again eat grains. I will never take any type of sweetener or any type of nuts. I will never take any type of oil or like this. The rest of his life, he just ate milk, yogurt, boiled subji and fruit. That's it. And then it's 50 years later. They would make vows. They had such character. So we have to be careful. We are elevated by the process of Krishna consciousness, but we have nothing to be proud of on our own account. It is due to the mercy of the Lord and his pure devotee. Srila Haridas Thakur set the example. Even after he became the most elevated transcendentalist, he did not assert himself as a superior person, but wished to be regarded as lowborn. In the name of becoming a transcendentalist, one should not be captured again by false pride. It means the false ego, that conception to be center, is so pernicious that it'll appropriate our good qualities to enhance our ego. We'll all of a sudden think, I am tolerant, I am self-controlled, I am clean, I am learned, I am religious. And then, in other words, therefore, there's a very interesting verse that says that one who is not humble and one who is not a devotee means really dedicated and humble. That's what devotee means. If one is not a devotee, even if he has all 12 brahminical qualities, he cannot save himself. Because if you're not dedicated and surrendered, you will appropriate everything for yourself and make you proud. And what is liberation means? It means to get free from ego. If you're not free from ego, you can't help others get free. He said that even if one is a devotee, he's humble. And he's born in a family of dog eaters. Rupa Goswami says, yes, they actually eat dogs. Even if he's born in that family, he can deliver the whole world. Why? Because he will not appropriate anything for himself. He'll be completely dedicated to God. So the example was, Haridas Thakur, who was born in a Muslim family, became the Namacharya. But he never wanted to increase his status. Because when you're humble, you're in a position to feel the love flow of God, which is mercy. And when you feel love from, you start to feel love for. And love for and love from is the feeling of happiness. So you will not feel love from if you're not humble. If you feel entitled, if you have pride, if you feel spoiled, you will not feel love from. You don't feel love from, you won't feel love for. So even though he was elevated, he wanted that position because in that position of humility, he was feeling so much mercy and love that it was expressed in terms of chanting, and done with love, you never want to stop. Because love is pleasure. Love is not done for an objective or goal. So therefore, love is the only activity that's happy. Other activities are done for an objective or goal. The goal is happiness, not what you're doing. If you do Jnana Yoga, you perform austerity. The goal is moksha. That's your pleasure, not what you're doing. In Karma Yoga, you perform sacrifices to get some fruit. That's not your happiness. The sacrifice is the fruit. But the definition of bhakti or love, it can't be done for anything. So it's pleasurable in itself. And therefore, Bhagavad Gita calls devotion to sukham kartam abhyam. It's very, very pleasurable. And therefore, when you feel that pleasure of love, you resist anything that will move you from that position if you do it. Glorification, praise, position. You have no interest. Now, I'm going to finish the last purport, and then we'll finish the class for today because I have to go and I have to travel back where I am. Usually, where I give the class is where I sleep. So if I go, only one who is ignorant of the transforming power of bhakti discriminates against devotees on the basis of material designations. Prabhupada writes, once you therefore observe, avoid observing the pure devotee externally, or should try to see the internal features and understand how he is engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. In her prayers to Lord Kapila, Devahuti confirms that the Lord's holy names possess the transcendental power to transform anyone. Oh, how glorious are they whose tongues are chanting your holy name, even if born in the family of Gaudiya, as they are worshipped, as they are dedicated. Okay. Quickly, anyone like to say hello?
Quickly, yes. Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Who's that?
This is Gail.
Oh, Gail. Hare Krishna. Thank you. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, Gordon Bhaktadas.
Wonderful. See you on Saturday.
Yes, Maharaj.
Okay. Anybody else?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, this is Brajraj.
Who is it?
Brajraj. Hare Krishna.
I'll also see you Saturday. I know there's many people that listen because I get the list that don't say hello. That's okay. It's not required. But we'll end for today. Pancha Kalpa Tulukya Sakata Sindhu Beva Japati Ganam Bhavya.